Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. My guest is Dr. Anthony Coleman. Dr. Coleman is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Broadlawns. It is a community hospital based in Des Moines, Iowa. And we're going to talk about the healthcare delivery system. We're going to talk about visioning. We're going to talk a bit about, workforce and workforce development and how you create, if you can, a well community. Dr. Coleman, welcome. Good to have you here, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Appreciate this opportunity.
You know, your CV, if you will, is so amazing. 20 years in the Navy, and you've traveled the world doing great things. I mean, and you can look this up, kids. You can look up the Marshall Plan. You traveled throughout Europe looking at healthcare delivery systems there, which is vastly different, by the way, than what we have in the United States. And then you were in Des Moines, Iowa. You spent time in South Carolina. Why? What is the draw to come to Des Moines to this community hospital of Broadlawns?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it starts with recognizing one's passion, and in particular, my passion to eliminate health disparities and pursue health equity and achieve health justice. And I think that when you discover what your passion is and you submit to it, you will go wherever it leads you. And so recognizing the need in this community and the opportunity, this is where my passion brought me.
And for background's sake, the largest city in Iowa, Des Moines, does have some healthcare disparities. And off mic, we were talking about how zip codes, and I read this in a national study not too long ago, how where you live can dictate not only your health, but your economic viability. Is that accurate?
It is accurate. It's sad to say, but, excuse me, that is accurate. It's sad to say, but more than anything else, your zip code is a predictor of your length of life. Mm-hmm. And now we're finding your quality of life.
Can you broaden that out a bit?
Sure. So when we talk about healthcare, I think that most Americans think of healthcare in an episodic way. And when I say episodic, what I mean is I'm sick right now, so I'll go to the doctor. And when I'm not sick, I don't need to go to the doctor, or I don't need to maintain my health. When in reality, your overall healthcare over the span of your life is the sum of things that you do every day. Hmm. And those things are affected by something called the social determinants of health. The social determinants of health are things that happen outside the hospital that have a direct impact on not only the quality of life you live, but the length of your life. Some of those social determinants include things like food insecurity. We know that individuals that live in some of the more socioeconomically challenged zip codes live in what we call food deserts, which means that you are more likely to find food available that's less healthy as opposed to food that's more healthy. Another social determinant of health is safe neighborhoods. Unfortunately, Des Moines was the victim of a school shooting about a month ago. That has a profound impact on the health of a community. We may not think of it that way. However, studies have linked safe neighborhoods to a reduction in health of the individuals that live in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Health literacy is another social determinant of health. An individual may come to an office visit with a doctor and receive medication, but if they don't understand how to use that medication and they're not literate about their health care, that's a barrier. So when we talk about healthcare and improving the health status of the community, the social determinants of health go hand in hand with that theory.
And those three things that you just set out for us. All of those issues are part and parcel to the area in which you serve, yes?
That's correct. We are a county tax-supported hospital, so we serve every resident of the county. However, our hospital is situated in the poorest zip code in Polk County. And it's a blessing to be in the neighborhood with the people that we're privileged to serve.
And those people that you serve throughout this particular zip code or this part of the country, I've worked in this area for several years and can share with you that all of that is accurate. And reaching that population has got to be a bit challenging. Do you go to the population, or are you expecting the population to come to you?
Well, that's a great question. I think nowadays we can't afford to sit in the hospital and expect for people to come to us. We have to meet people where they are. We have to meet the community where they are. We have individuals that are transportation challenged. We have individuals that English is not their native language. We have individuals who, quite frankly, are afraid to come to a hospital. And so in addition to actually providing care, before you get to providing care, you have to create an environment that's welcoming and that tears down the barriers to receiving that care. And you do that by meeting people where they are.
There is a new idea. It's called a sobriety center, or help me out here just a bit.
Yeah, we haven't quite settled on the name, but the concept is that of a sobering center.
What does that mean?
Well, it's an effort that I'm proud to partner with Polk County in, and what it does is it provides an alternative to individuals that suffer from the disease of alcoholism. Normally, what happens in most American cities is you have an individual probably drink a little too much, get intoxicated, the police are called, and they end up in jail, or they end up in the emergency department, neither of which is the appropriate place for them to be. But the sobering center offers an alternative, and it offers a safe place for these individuals to sober up, for lack of a better term, and then receive care for their disease, should they choose to do so.
And this sobering center, which is on the cusp of being created, from what I understand, this is giving people an opportunity. One of the things you just said, Doctor, is it's so true. Once you get into the system, and we're talking about the judicial system and the police system, it's very hard to break out of that, because all of a sudden you're owing money that you may not have, and that puts you behind the eight ball even more so. Would you agree?
I would agree wholeheartedly. Another social determinant of health is economic stability. Mm-hmm. So if you have an individual who is an alcoholic and comes from a low socioeconomic background, and you jail them and impose fines and put them farther or further behind the economic eight ball, so to speak, it becomes a vicious cycle. That's what this sobering center is trying to avoid, in addition to providing help. And it's important to understand that for individuals that suffer from the horrible disease that is alcoholism, it may be your third or your fourth time that you decide to get help. But the point that I want to make in the sobering center offering between Broadlawns Medical Center and Polk County is that our doors are open. And whether it takes one time or two time or 10 times for that individual to seek help, we're going to be there for them.
You've been here since 2021, I believe. And already, I think the fruits of your work and the board is being seen across the state. This is the largest public hospital in Iowa, and I would suspect that the future holds some great opportunity if you can get funding. Let's talk about funding for just a moment. You mentioned that you're a Polk County-supported facility, but that's not always enough, is it? You do also have to rely on the generosity of others.
That is correct, especially in today's environment where we're just coming off the heels of record inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of goods, the cost of pharmaceuticals, the cost of food, not to mention the labor crisis or the labor shortage, however you want to term it, has caused our expenses to increase. And I think it's important to understand with hospitals, we are what you call a minimum margin industry. What that means is that our margins are always very thin.
That's pretty skinny.
That's the nature of this operation. Yeah. And another thing that I think it's important to understand about hospitals is that when prices go up in terms of our expenses, we cannot, nor do we, pass that on to the customer, because most of our patients, our customers are our patients. Most of our patients can't afford health care as it is. So what we do as a medical center is we absorb that cost.
Mm.
We absorb that cost and we manage our expense trend to try to close the gap.
One of the things that you and I talked about off mic, and it was just stunning to me. I was waiting in your waiting room, and there on the wall from December 19, 1992, was the front page of the Des Moines Register. And on that page was the Iowa poll. We're all familiar with the Iowa poll, Jay Seltzer and Company and the Des Moines Register. The most interesting thing I found on that front page was this little snippet. 1992, 73% of those polled in the state of Iowa support a national health care program that would be run by the government, and 55% of those polled would gladly pay taxes to support it. That was 21 years ago. What difference would something like that make for a place like not only Broadlands, but also the population? And I don't do politics on the NewsHour, please understand that. But what would something like that do to the health of citizens in the United States?
That's a great question, and I don't think it's a political question. I think it's a question of humanity. It's a question of looking at your neighbor and doing what you can to make sure that we all have our heads above water, so to speak. I think that some type of organized healthcare system that looked out for everyone at a very basic level would help to uplift the health status of our entire nation. If you take a look at our nation over the past 50 years, we've gotten sicker as a nation. We've become more obese. Cancer is starting to become detected in our citizens at younger and younger ages. So we're going in the wrong direction in terms of our overall health. And I think the sooner that we can get our arms around it in a very organized fashion, the better off we'll be as a people. The way to do that is through healthcare for everyone, a basic level of healthcare that maintains health and allows individuals to experience a healthy lifestyle.
You spent time in Europe. I talked about this in the opening about with the Marshall Plan and taking a look at healthcare delivery systems in Europe. How does all of that differ from the healthcare systems that we offer here in the United States?
That's a great question. To answer that question, I think we have to look at the age of our country as opposed to the age of European countries. We're very relatively young compared to Europe and some other European countries. And so when I was in Europe and I studied universal health care and I studied the World Health Organization, what I found was that that concept was more palatable for those nations of people, because there seemed to be more of a understanding that healthcare was a community issue. And I also read a study by an organization called the Commonwealth Fund. They publish a study called Mirror Mirror. And in that study, they compare 11 nations, the healthcare of 11 nations based on cost and based on outcomes. The United States is one of those 11 nations, and the United States ranks number 11 in terms of outcomes, but number one in terms of cost of care. So what am I saying? We come in with the worst health outcomes, but we spend the most money. And when you talk about healthcare, it's very interesting when I hear individuals talk about health insurance. I really think it should be called health assurance, because insurance means that you may need it, you may not need it. But assurance means that at some point there's a guarantee that you will use it. And I'm here to say that every one of us that's living at some point is going to need health care. So when we talk about health care and when we talk about uplifting the health status of our community and building healthier communities and a healthier nation, we should look at health care in terms of making it an assurance for all citizens and all residents of this nation.
And then the quality of life should improve.
It will improve. I was talking with some friends a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about different aspects of the United States and humanity and what, you know, what's needed. Do we need jobs? Do we need affordable housing? And yes, we need all that. But I'm here to tell you that none of that matters if you're not healthy.
That's right. Treasure your health every single moment. I want to come back just for a moment. We were talking about the Sobering Center, and I wrote this note down, Doctor. Dr. Anthony Coleman, ladies and gentlemen, is my guest, president and chief executive officer of Broadlawns Medical Center, located in Des Moines, Iowa. I wanted to come back to the Sobering Center and ask a question about drug-related issues, the rise in fentanyl. Recently, Narcan has been distributed to elementary schools in the state of Iowa. This is concerning, I think, for every person. And it's not inner city issues. These are some rural issues that we're facing in the state of Iowa and across the country. It's pretty surprising.
It is surprising, and it's also disheartening. The Sobering Center, you know, our plan for the Sobering Center is to address alcoholism. We don't have plans for any other type of substance abuse interventions at this point, but you bring up a good observation in terms of the increased drug use. And I also want to point out that, you know, drug use being pervasive in neighborhoods and in younger kids is something that's been going on in the United States since the early 80s. I am glad that as a nation, we're starting to look at it as an epidemic and starting to do something about it. And I hope that we take a holistic approach and we look at every neighborhood and every community, whether they're affluent or less than affluent, because drugs are pervasive in every community in America.
One of the things I think that we're fighting, and you may agree, is the significant loneliness that people are feeling post-COVID or during COVID. We don't really know where we are from time to time on that. That has changed everything. What about that pandemic created a more aware culture or a culture that was different here at Broadlawns?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure that I can answer that having been here or arrived here in the middle of the pandemic. But what I can tell you about the staff and physicians at Broadlawns Medical Center is that everyone that I come in contact comes to work every day with the patient in mind and in their heart, and they do their absolute best to provide a healing environment. That's what one of the things that makes me proud to work here.
What are the other issues that everybody across the nation is talking about? We just got a jobs report not very long ago that talked about a surprising number of jobs that were created in February and a staggering 517,000 jobs that were created in January. So I want to come back to the workforce issue. There's 10.8 million jobs for everyone looking for a job. How's the workforce here at Broadlawns? Is that a daily struggle?
It is a challenge daily. You know, workforce has always been a challenge. I think the COVID pandemic just exacerbated it in healthcare. Because you have to think, you've got nurses and physicians coming to work every day.
Frontline,
literally with people as they take their last breath. And that takes a toll on a caregiver. And I don't think the healthcare system was set up before the pandemic to actually care for the caregiver. And so our nurses, our physicians, our CMAs, all of our individuals that come to work in a hospital every day and did so for 3 years over the course of the thick of the pandemic are now fatigued, and they're experiencing probably something with the likeness of PTSD. And I think as a healthcare system, we didn't do enough on the front end to focus on physician wellness, employee wellness, psychological safety, and really just sitting down and asking our staff and our physicians, how are you doing? And what does psychological safety look like to you? What can I do for you? And so now we're on the back end, in most cases, trying to recoup that. But in some cases, unfortunately, it's too late. I've had nurses that just say, I just can't do this anymore. I need to do something different. And it makes me sad. I completely understand. But that's where we are as a healthcare industry.
And we're seeing that across several disciplines, also in the teaching profession. Because, again, just like in healthcare, you are frontline individuals work, and you don't have really a choice in all of this. And it is sometimes a real taxing thing on the mental health of the people delivering care. A final question for you, Doctor. All right, we've been talking about a whole host of things. Let's vision here for just a moment, if we can, which is always the fun part. Any CEO or president of any organization, whether it's manufacturing to healthcare to education, has some idea where the path is headed. What about you, Dr. Coleman? What do you think you'd like to see? What's the vision?
Well, visioning and strategy is a fun part of my job. And when I think about Broadlawns Medical Center, and when I think about the tremendous opportunity that we have every day to serve the patients of this county, and really patients in the state of Iowa, I think the vision and the direction for Broadlawns points towards increasing access to care. There are individuals in Polk County who need health care but can't get to our hospital because they don't have vehicles, or whatever the case may be. And as we talked about earlier, we have to meet people where they are. So my vision for Broadlawns and the future of this organization as it relates to the county is to increase access and remove barriers. My goal is that anyone that needs care can come to any building that has Broadlawns on the outside and bring their whole self without fear of being treated differently or not receiving the care that they deserve.
It is a noble profession and a noble center here in the midst of the greater Des Moines metro and in Iowa. Dr. Coleman, thank you so much for spending so much time with me. I really do appreciate it, sir.
Thank you for your time. This has been great.
That, once again, is the voice of Dr. Anthony Coleman, the president and chief executive officer of a public hospital located in Des Moines, Iowa. That would be Broadlawns, and yes, we will have links to Broadlawns on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for being with us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now was arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Dr. Anthony Coleman, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.